All right, welcome to the Free Stretch, Week 16 edition. I'm Bobby Fenton here on JoeBucksFan.com. Thank you for joining us, and it doesn't even feel normal to say Week 16, even for the NFL season with an extended week now, the past few years and 17 games. It still feels like it goes by really, really fast. College, of course, is already over with, and they're into the postseason there, but yet we are here at the cusp of what's basically going to determine how we remember the 2025 Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Like 5 years from now, 10 years from now, whatever it is, whatever memories we have of this year, what's already happened won't even register. It'll be what happens in the next 3 weeks and hopefully more. Or maybe we'll just remember nothing at all. That's possible too. There's a lot of Bucs seasons I can think of like that between 2010 and 2019 pretty much. So what I want to talk about on today's show, as the Bucs get set to travel to Charlotte, they'll take on the Panthers Sunday at 1 p.m. in the first of their final three games, two of which are against Carolina. And what I want to talk about today is just basically what are we really looking at here? And when I say what are we really looking at here, I've been thinking a lot this past week. Well, more than that, ever since the Atlanta game, which actually was a week ago tonight. I'm recording this on Thursday afternoon. And obviously, mathematically, the Bucs, as bad as everything feels, are kind of in pretty okay shape. Where they're basically at the point mathematically where what they would need to do is nothing that any team that we hope they could be anyway wouldn't be able to do, if that makes sense. And if they can't do it, then they were never what we were hoping they were going to be to begin with, and we're just wasting our time. So first things first, let's get into the scenarios here on the Free Stretch, because I've been hearing a lot of misinformation, most of it unofficial. Like when I read Twitter and, official either team sources or official media who cover the team, they've pretty much got it right. But I see a lot of people out there and, some of them are just regular civilians, a little bit of it on sports talk or whatever. And people asking me, hey, Bobby, what's the scenario? Bucs are definitely done if they lose on Sunday, right? Let's get everything cleared up, okay? Because people are wrong about a lot of things, okay? Nothing will happen this Sunday as far as clinching, no matter what happens in the football game. If the Bucs lose on Sunday, we're going to feel really bad. They'll have lost their, fifth out of six or whatever it is, and they'll just generally feel like a football team that sucks and can't do anything right. That's what will happen if the Bucs lose on Sunday. But mathematically, not all that much will change. The Buccaneers would be able to win their final two games and even maybe lose to the Dolphins as long as Carolina also lost to Seattle in Week 17. As long as they go out and beat the Panthers in the second game at home in Week 18, they'd still win the division. So the simplest way of looking at it, like I said, if the Bucs win any two of their final three games, they clinch the division, period. If they just win one of the final three games, it would have to be one of the Panthers games, and the Panthers would have to lose to Seattle in the middle game, which is next week, not this week, when they host Seattle. So, and if you look at that Week 17 slate, the Bucs are down in Miami where they'll be a favorite, probably, unless they're really bad this week. And even then, the Dolphins, as you probably heard, have gone ahead and made the move from Tua over to Quinn Ewers, who would be making his second NFL start by next week. But the Bucs will be favored in that game, and Seattle will be an underdog against Carolina in that game. Carolina will be an underdog to Seattle in that game. So the Bucs' odds of winning the division, even if they lose on Sunday, aren't really bad. And if they win on Sunday, they're in total control. Basically, the Bucs' magic number is 3. Just like baseball, if you want to think of it in baseball terms, combined number of wins by you and losses by your closest competitor is what you need to clinch over that competitor. Magic number is 3, and of course, 2 would be taken care of with any head-to-head win over Carolina, and then the Bucs just need one good result in the other games on the Week 17 Sunday where they, again, go down to Miami and Carolina plays Seattle. They just need one of those two games to go the right way in addition to splitting with Carolina, and they're in. So, like I said, they lose on Sunday. It doesn't actually change the overall scenarios, but it's going to feel really bad, of course, after the way things have been going for the Bucs lately. Everybody feels like it's time for a win, whereas Carolina's alternated win-loss, win-loss, win-loss for a while now. The Bucs got out hot. They've been terrible since the bye week. another one. You know, Thursday night at this point was so long ago, I'm not going to go back over the game a ton, but we are going to go over it a little bit and look ahead to the Carolina game. But once again, to reiterate, get your scenarios right. The Bucks need only to win two of their final three, even if this weekend isn't one of the two, okay? They only need to win two of their final three, or they could even win one of their final three as long as one of the Carolina. They have to win in one of the Carolina games and then either beat Miami or have Carolina lose to Seattle or win both of them or whatever. So there's a lot more paths for the Bucks than Carolina. The Bucks control their own destiny, and that will still be the case next week no matter what happens this weekend. But we obviously don't want to go down that road. We all love for the Bucks to just go out and take care of business, beat Carolina on Sunday, beat Miami next week, and then you can rest starters or whatever you want to do if you need to for the final game. It's Carolina. It wouldn't matter at that point. But nothing's getting clinched either way by either team this weekend. So how did we even get here? Because really, I mean, the Bucks are in the same place they were last week thanks to Carolina losing. But if they had beaten Atlanta, they'd be in really good shape. And what happened in that Atlanta game? So here's the only thing I want to say, because it's all been, by this point, you guys have consumed enough media. If you're listening to my show and you're listening to a Bucks-oriented podcast on Joe Bucks Fan, then you've probably consumed a lot of other Bucks-related media as well, and you don't need me to rehash everything that happened in the Atlanta game. So back to my question, what are we looking at here? The Bucks lost 29-28 to Atlanta after having a 28-14 lead and giving up 15 unanswered points, because the Falcons had two failed two-point conversion attempts. 15 unanswered points and losing by one. Then after the game, of course, you all know Todd Bowles got in there, which he never even, I've never heard him curse, I don't think ever, let alone, he didn't really raise his voice, but even in the same tone of voice he always uses, he dropped several F-bombs and basically directly called his team out. Not any one guy by name, but he called out the players and said, no, we coached it, now you didn't go do it. And said it. And so I heard a lot of people on both sides. Some people were saying, I love it. Finally, the fire we've been waiting to see from Todd Bowles. We always say we want to see more fire, and he showed it. Others were like, oh, it's a bad look. Looks bad. It comes back to the head man. He's blaming other people. Well, let me tell you this, first of all. I think it's a little bit of both, probably. The 4th and 14, we all know by now, I mean, they're in cover 2. Kendall Vildor is at the corner spot, which normally does have the flat. Obviously, you have to know your situation. I coach kids. My son's in 8th grade, and I've coached his flag football teams for years, and regular football and baseball. You know, when they're young kids, you got to remind them of every little thing. You wouldn't think you have to remind an adult professional that, hey, it's 4th and 14, so we don't really care about anything short. You need to drop a little further and make sure we don't give up a touch or a catch, you know, at the sticks, right? That's the whole point. So Vildor, first of all, lined up like in press man. I have no idea why. Instead of giving a 5-7 yard cushion, whatever. They do that, right? It'll be 3rd and 4, and they'll give them the 7 yard cushion. Then they throw a hitch, and we all go, why did they give them that cushion? Then it's 4th and 14. And the guys rolled up like every blade of grass has to be defended between the line of scrimmage and the 5 yard mark. And no, it didn't. So anyway, Kendall Vildor is one guy there. You know, Winfield, was he late getting over? People have been arguing about it on Twitter. No, it was more Vildor's fault. No, it was more Winfield's fault. Here's my question. And I always say this when I question coaching, especially at this level, okay? These guys, you've heard me say this before a million times if you listen to my show, these guys have forgotten more about football in the last 15 minutes than I'll ever know in my life, okay? These are professional football coaches, and most of them before that were professional football players. And I've coached a little bit of football at the high school level, at the JV level, teaching kids how to actually line up and stand at wide receiver and what route to run. And that's as far as I've got. So I'm not pretending like I'm some X's and O's guru. These guys have forgotten more than I'll ever, ever know, okay? With that said, it's 4th and 14. Why are we in cover 2? Like, cover 3, cover 4, something. We can give up a little bit of the shallow stuff. Cover 2 is more of a defense where you want to take away the flats, where you want to take away some down low stuff. Why are we in cover 2 in that spot? That's not even a rhetorical question or a criticism. I would really love to be able to talk to Todd Bowles one-on-one and say, hey, explain to me, like, just so I could learn, seriously, because I'm not saying I know more than him. I know they know more than me. But I thought that was curious. Like, why are we in a defense where the guy's natural job In this case, Kendall Vildor's job is to cover the flat. Why are we in a defense where that's his natural job that doesn't need to be done? And he's got to change what he'd normally do in that coverage. And we say, oh, no, drop further. Even though we're in cover two, we don't need to cover that. Well, then don't call that. Like, call, you know, put him in cover three, get some guys drop back, rush four, rush five, whatever, you know, rush three. But make sure you've got every possible corner of the field covered where the sticks might be. Instead of split safeties up there, and a guy gets lined up a little too shallow, now there's that dead spot, which it always is, above the corner and below the safety where he can't get over, and that's exactly where they hit Sills for the first down. That's the question I had. So, I'm not, like I said, I'm not going to go back and rehash every single play in the game. I will say this, when I asked the main question, the theme of our show today, what are we really looking at here? Okay? The offense looked better on Thursday night. I mean, they scored enough points where they should have been able to win the game, and it was nice having everybody back. Mike Evans clearly made a difference. Jalen McMillan, it made a difference having their top four receivers, and even without Otten, you know, Culp made a night. He caught a touchdown. Like, the offense showed some life for the first time in a while. I still don't think the offense is pulling its weight, though. And Mayfield, and of course he had the huge pick when the Bucs were going in and up by eight. At that point, it was 28-20, I'm pretty sure, right? So, yeah. So, at that point, if they even get a field goal out of that, and they were on the plus side of the 50, weren't quite in field goal range yet, they're going to be up two scores at a pretty late juncture of the game, and Mayfield throws a terrible pick to the left side, and you know, at that point, I felt like the game was about to be over if we score, and even not even a touchdown, just anything, if we score anything, and he throws a pick. Then, of course, there was the play later in the game where you know, we were trying to run the clock out. Bucks had gotten one first down, but they needed one more. Graham Barton got blown up on first down, which is happening way too often. And I think if it was Bucky, got nailed in the backfield for a four-yard loss. And we're just trying to salt the game away. So now it's second and 14. And they passed the ball. This is another one where I blame Bulls. Okay? They passed the ball on second and 14 and third and 14, allowing the clock to stop on the second and 14 incompletion, where Atlanta didn't have any timeouts, and if they had just run the ball, even if you're not going to get the first down, just run the ball twice. That clock gets way down there. You're punting. Atlanta's down their own, under, you know, behind their 20-yard line with under a minute left. Now, with our defense, I get it. You're thinking, well, I don't even know if we can trust that. We need to get aggressive. We need to get a first down. I get it. So what happened? Second and 14 was open. Abuka over the middle. Mayfield threw it behind him. Clean pocket. And it's a theme because Mayfield, it seems like, and he made some good play. I mean, again, the overall offense was fine. But on Thursday night, it seems like he's like stacking himself. He's starting scrambles early. There's not, you know, everybody looks at the play and you see him drop back and then you see him running around. You go, oh, the protection broke down again. But if you watch it over, it really didn't. Like, these are clean pockets. And he starts getting happy feet. He starts running around. And again, this is where I stop and say, hey, I don't want to criticize. There are too many radio show hosts and these talking heads and these guys on these yelling shows on ESPN or Fox Sports or whatever. You know, and maybe they've got the right idea. They're getting paid lots of money and I'm not. So maybe I should yell and scream about stuff I don't know about just so I sound like I have some sort of authority. You know, they're paid to have a take come hell or high water when I think it's okay to say, hey, we're not sure, you know. But I'm not sure, like, is it Josh Grizzard's offense? Is it too vertical? Is it taking too long for someone to get open quick? I mean, I'll tell you this much. The difference between early in the year and late in the year right now to me, offensively, is I watch Mayfield drop back, and you want to see your quarterback drop back, stick a back foot in the ground, drive forward, and throw with intent at a target you know he sees and is there. That doesn't happen now. It seems like even when the protection is really good, it seems like no one is open. Or at the very least, maybe he's not seeing, and there's a few points, because if you look at the all 22, there's a few times where he's missing guys, just missing them. But there's other times where there's just nobody open. And you watch all these other teams, and granted, they're playing against our defense, so maybe it's not comparing apples to apples. But all these other teams, they drop back, and they can always get something, you know? Like, there's the middle of the field in particular is a complete playground for the opposition, and they always find a way to get something. I mean, look at Kyle Pitts, who doesn't really normally whiz a drop, and of course he has one of the all-time great games from any tight end in NFL history against the Bucs the other night. You can always get 5, 6, 7 yards. The quarterback drops back, he stops, he pumps, boom, he hits something. And so, like I said, I don't know if Grizzard, it just feels like a really low percentage of the time for our offense that a first read is open. Where Mayfield drops back, boom, deliver the ball, there it is, first down, or there it is, completion. That's happening less and less. He's standing there, he's looking around, then he starts feeling like pressure should be coming, even when it's not. Like I said, he scrambled his way out of a few clean pockets where he had more time than he thought, and it just doesn't look like, he doesn't look like himself. So I know he's had injuries, not official injuries, but the kind of injuries you get when you, you know, play week after week and take the kind of punishment he does, which he deserves a ton of credit for, by the way. I mean, it's easy for me to sit here in my kitchen and criticize somebody having happy feet in the pocket when I'm not in the pocket myself. It ain't easy, okay? So maybe, you know, part of it's injuries, or maybe part of it's just, I don't know if it's our scheme or what, but it feels like nobody's open, or often enough nobody's open. The Bucs don't work the middle of the field enough. They finally did when they got their first touchdown. It paid off. So I feel like the offense still isn't pulling its weight. They're going to need more, although they got enough the other night. And then, of course, the defense is a total, just totally in shambles right now. And Rick Stroud on his Twitter feed, I mean, he really, I want to give him credit because he said it very succinctly in one of his tweets responding to a reader. He said, how many impact players do they have on this defense right now? How many guys in this defense are like, hell yes, that guy's an awesome, you know. I mean, Jamel Dean has, injuries notwithstanding, has had a hell of a year. I would say he's an impact player. Vita Vea, somewhat, although less than I kind of feel like he should be, but only a little less. He's still pretty good. And that's it. It's certainly anybody impacting the pass rush game. Antoine Winfield Jr., he makes a couple plays here and there, but he's not the guy he was when he first started in the league. It feels like he's regressed. He doesn't make as many splash plays, if any, as he used to. So at every level of the defense, it's kind of like, eh, you know. And obviously, the 3rd and 28/4th and 14 from the other night is the most glaring example. But even after Mayfield threw the pick, remember, I just talked about Mayfield threw that pick when they were up 28-20. You know, the Bucs could have just gotten a stop there, and that would have been fine too. But what they do, let Atlanta go down there and score. It was 28-6 a few minutes, or 28-26, I should say, a few minutes later. And then, oh God, the fumble luck. That's I know it's frustrating, but that's random. You can't. There were two fumbles in that game. The one on the touchdown drive I just referenced where Pitts caught the touchdown a play or two later where the Atlanta player fumbled. There are literally six Buccaneers there. They can't make the play. The ball squirts away. The thing ain't round, my Uncle Randy used to say. Ball ain't round. It'll bounce funny on you. And he's right. And then Falcons lineman recovers it, and they're in the end zone a few plays later. Bucs win if they recover that. And then the other one, which I still don't know what the hell happened, where it looked like we did recover it, and the NFL was just like, no, that's a dual possession. Yeah, tie goes to the runner. What do you mean dual possession? There's no dual possession on a fumble. Like, our guy had it. It was Reddick, right? I think he came out of the pile with it. If you see someone recover it, you blow it dead. If you don't, you clear the pile, and whoever has the ball on the bottom has the ball. And that was Reddick. Anyway, so I wasn't going to go into too much about the Atlanta game, but I guess there was a little more to it than that. But it's just really frustrating. And so, back to my question, what are we really looking at here? We were looking at a team that has a mathematical chance to be exactly where we hope they'd be before the season starts, but we also know better, right? I mean, what are we really looking at here? An average football team, right? Like, I don't think the Bucs are bad. I don't think they're very good. They're literally average at 7-7, where they'll probably finish, I mean, they'll finish either 8-9 or 9-8. I doubt they go 10-7. I doubt they go 7-10. But are they a team that makes you think anything good at all could happen once they're in the postseason? No, of course not. Now, I have to be honest with you. I'm an optimist. I'm someone who wants, first of all, I want the fun. Now, that's what this is, after all. It's fun and entertainment, right? I mean, we want to be entertained. I want the fun. So it's no fun to say, oh, we suck anyway. Who cares if we make the playoffs or not? No, I like that the Bucs have a big game this Sunday at 1. I'm looking forward to Sunday at 1, even now on Thursday. I can't wait for Bucs-Panthers on Sunday. Why is that? Because there are stakes. So if I tell myself, oh, well, the Bucs suck anyway, and they're going to lose to whoever the 5 seed is that comes in here, even if they do make the playoffs, what fun is that? And I have to admit, I mean, on Sunday, I was watching football a lot of the day, but then I had to go help a friend with something on Sunday afternoon. So I was actually in the car when the Panthers and the Saints game on Sunday evening when it was coming to an end. And I have SiriusXM, so on the NFL network, on the radio channel, the NFL radio channel on SiriusXM, they basically do a radio version of Red Zone on Sundays, which is actually really cool. It's just as good. Actually, I'm someone who loves play-by-play, and I love listening to the radio and sports on the radio. So if you ever have a chance and you're in your car, put the NFL Network on radio on Sunday, and they do the same thing. They throw it, okay, hey, there. I can't remember who the host is, but there's a guy, and he's like, okay, going over to Carolina. Looks like they're on the 30-yard line, first and 10. Here's Panthers radio, and then boom, you plug right into their Panther play-by-play feed. Or it could be, you know, whatever, whoever. And they go all around the NFL. So I'm in my car driving. I was driving to Lutz. And I'm alone. And I'm listening to the final drive of this Carolina-New Orleans game where New Orleans has the ball and they're driving and then they get stopped. Then there's the personal foul. I mean, I'm screaming and there's nobody there. Like, it's not like I was doing this for anybody's benefit. I'm pounding the steering wheel. Then the Saints make the field goal and I, like, honk the horn over. I was pumped. I was like, yes, the Bucs have a better chance now. And a more skeptical person, a more cynical person, might be in my ear saying, Bobby, what are you so excited about? They're not going to do anything. They're going to, even if they go to the playoffs, what are they going to do? I don't know. I want to go to a damn home playoff game on Wild Card weekend. I don't care. Never mind that they could win. Who knows? You could remember when the Beast Quake, remember when Seattle was 7-9 and they won the NFC West and they hosted the Saints and they won that game? And they didn't win anything after that. I mean, I don't think the Bucs are going to the Super Bowl. I don't harbor illusions. But I don't care. Get in. Get a home playoff game. You will have a chance, even if you're an underdog, you will have a chance to win that game. You may even be playing a team you already beat on the road in Seattle. Now, I don't think anybody thinks the Bucs and Seattle are the same two teams they were back when the Bucs won that first one. But still, you don't know. Stop acting like you know everything, you know? They could win. Then they're playing on the divisional weekend. On the road against somebody better than them, which they probably lose that. Okay, fine. Well, I remember they did that 2 years ago when they beat the Eagles on Monday night in the, you know, wild card game, and then they went and lost to Detroit. Very close, by the way. They almost made the NFC Championship game. So who the hell knows? I don't know. But I'm not going to sit here, even though I'm not saying you're wrong, cynical person out there, whoever you are, saying, Bobby, what's the difference? I know what we're looking at. Maybe you don't, but I do. We're looking at an average team that can't compete in January and doesn't have what it takes and needs to make some changes. All those things not only could be true, but you know what? They probably are true. But let that be for the offseason, because right now the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are in first place in the NFC South. They have a chance to win it for the fifth year in a row, which is not something anybody's done in the South, and something the Bucs have sure as hell never done. They had never done four. And they have a chance to host a home playoff game, which is a big freaking deal to me, at least, as a kid who grew up where the Bucs literally didn't play in any playoff game until I was 17 years old, and they only played in one in my entire adult life, or in my entire childhood, and then I was an adult by the time they did any more. I'm glad. I always think back to the early days of the Bucs and how bad they were, and I always say I'm thankful for it because it taught me loyalty. It taught me not to be a bandwagon fan. I remember being a kid and being so excited. I wasn't cynical back then. I wasn't jaded back then. And just to go to a game was such an exciting thing. And I'm talking about not just a little kid, like even when I was 13, 14 years old. Just having my mom or my dad say, hey, we're going to the Bucs game today, got me so pumped. I didn't look at the records. I didn't look at, the Bucs are 3-8, so who the hell cares? Which is what I would do now. Like, now I'm like a jaded adult. I'm like, oh, whatever, they're 3-8, who cares? These games mean nothing, you know? But back when I was a kid, I didn't care. And it felt like every game was the Super Bowl back then. Like, I was just happy the Bucs won. Hey, now they're 4-8 instead of 3-9. I'm happy. Like, that, it was that simple when I was young. And I'm grateful for that. I am. But I also think about my son now, who has grown up with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, a version of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, that has played a home playoff game, that has won their division every single year of his childhood that he can remember. The last time the Bucs like didn't do anything in the postseason was 2019, when he was 5 years old. He didn't remember, or not five. He was 8 years old. My daughter was five. But anyway, he's grown up with the Bucs being good. And of course we're going to win the division. Of course we're going to have home playoff games. Like, that to him is natural. And, you know, like, my 12-year-old brain back in 1992 couldn't even comprehend the idea of the Bucs playing a game in week 17 where they weren't already mathematically eliminated, let alone actually making the playoffs. Like, the Bucs were eliminated by Thanksgiving every year. So they didn't play any important games in December, let alone in January. So it matters, okay? And that's my message to you today on this show. Let's all, and this goes for the players, the coaches, the people involved with the team, as well as the fans like you and me who don't have anything to do with the team. We just follow it, okay? And Josh Grizzard said today after practice, he said, you would have no idea that we just lost these games these past few weeks, or you would have no idea, especially the last 2 weeks in a row, what has happened based on practice today. They were upbeat. They were into it. Let's all do that. Let's all just take a collective reset. If there's any benefit from having a Thursday night horrid loss like that, when it's that it was on Thursday night, they got a mini bye, and let's reset everything and understand, instead of trying to make predictions about what they're capable of, and instead of trying to look way down the road, let's say as we go into week 16 right now, the Buccaneers control their own destiny, and every single thing they set out to do before the season started, they have a chance to do right now. And let's just leave it at that. Can you get with me on that? I'm asking you right now, listener. Can you get with me on that? Can you get your mind to that place? Let's get out of being jaded. Let's forget about how the defense, and I know this probably lasts like two series and something bad will happen and we'll all go back to it. But for now, let's get out of how just much utter contempt we all have for the way the defense has played, or how the offense hasn't done anything since the first, that Seattle game, which feels like it was a million years ago. Blow all that out of your mind, flush it, and let's get ready for some football. Bucks Panthers Sunday 1 p.m. in what should be chilly but not freezing Carolina, and it's balmy weather the rest of the way in until, hope, you know, if the Bucks go far. But they got Miami next week, and then they're home in Week 18. And understand again, what do we need to do? Win one of the two Carolina games and beat the Dolphins, or not even beat the Dolphins, but have Carolina lose to Seattle, which they'll be an underdog in. I'm not going to get into percentages. I'm not going to go on the odds or look at the, you know, what Cirque Sports or whatever the hell it is, and I don't care. None of that matters, okay? The Bucks have a good chance, and I think, although I've said this 2 weeks in a row now, I think they're due to play a pretty good game because, as you know, maybe they weren't as good as we thought they were when they were out to that hot start and they were winning close games, and they went to Seattle and went on the road, and they were pulling off all these unbelievable comebacks and won all these games in the final minute, and they were whatever they were, 6-2 or whatever it was. Yeah, they're not that good, probably as good as it seemed then, but they're also sure as hell not as bad as it seemed since then. So, and here's the other thing. I keep hearing about fire Todd Bowles, lost the locker room, blah, blah, blah. Folks, not you, not me, not anybody on the radio, not anybody in the newspaper, even the people that go in the locker room for a few minutes and do their reporting, even then, none of us really know who's lost the locker room or who hasn't. For all we know, everything's fine. Yeah, I saw Mike Evans coming off the field after the Atlanta game going, it's 3rd and 28. It's 3rd and 28. Almost ready to slam his head into a cinder block wall. That doesn't mean anything's wrong in the locker room. That's normal frustration. That happens all the time. Okay? Oh, they've tuned out Bowles. You have no idea. Don't say that. You don't know. I don't know. Okay? I know Todd Bowles gets a lot of blame for things, and some of it's deserved, but he gets a lot of blame for things no matter whose fault it actually is, and he doesn't get a lot of credit for the things he's done well. And he's done some pretty good coaching jobs over the years here with this team. Obviously, the goal we want, all the same thing we all want, is to go win the Super Bowl and be one of those teams, and the Bucs haven't been that. They've been a team that's won a mediocre division and been able to, you know, sneak up here and there, and they won a playoff game a couple years ago and get to the divisional weekend. They haven't gone any further than that, and that's what we all want. I know. But I think Todd Bowles, I mean, I'm not the Glazers. Like Rick Stroud said, another thing he said on his Twitter feed, he said, you know, if this goes bad these final 3 weeks, yeah, Bowles very well could pay for it. And he'd shoulder some of the blame. But there's a lot more to it than that. And so, for now, I'm ready for Sunday. And I'm not thinking about it in terms any more greater or lesser than that. I hope you're with me too. Email me if you want to, bobbygameday@yahoo.com. BobbyGameDay, bobbygameday@yahoo.com. is the email address. You can get me on Twitter and on Blue Sky, same thing, at Bobby Game Day. And aside from that, folks, here we are. All that's already happened this year and the defining weeks and games of the 2025 Tampa Bay Buccaneers season are yet to happen. They're going to start with this one on Sunday at 1. So Have some fun with it. Invite some people over. These are the big games now. This is when football gets real in the NFL. It's December and January. We're there. Enjoy it. I want to thank you for listening. I want to thank the Joes, joebucksfan.com, the single best place anywhere for Buccaneer coverage, TV, internet, radio, and being on this site is a privilege. Give me the chance to get in front of all of you. So thanks to them. Have a great weekend. Get all your holiday prep done and get ready for some football. We got games on Saturday and Sunday, college and NFL. It's all coming to a head right now. So get with me and be ready. And wherever you are, good morning, good afternoon, good night, and go Bucks.